Next, we're in an olive grove meeting olive oil producers Nalini and Colin Baruch, who are celebrating a very special anniversary this year. I caught up with the couple as Nalini was chatting with contractor Andrew Priddle at the helm of a harvesting machine.
How's it going?
Good.
Happy with the results?
Today we are.
Look at the weather.
The weather's awesome. And the fruit's coming off nicely.
Yeah. So you're doing pick well?
No, this is Lachino.
It's the 21st harvest for Lot 8, an olive oil brand set up by Nalini and Colin Baruch when they arrived in Wairarapa in the late 1990s.
Great. This is Andrew. Andrew's worked with Lot 8 right from Andrew's arrival, actually, on the scene. So we have a very, very long relationship, to the extent that I trust him so much that I sometimes trust him more than I trust myself.
They're among the region's first generation of olive oil producers, producing an array of award-winning extra virgin and flavoured olive oils.
I mean, the fruit is gorgeous, stunning fruit, every one of them, isn't it?
So. Yeah. No, they haven't seen any major disease in it.
No.
Well, none here, no.
Not on this problem.
No, not here.
The business has grown over a quarter of a century, and now they have a family of around 15 contract growers and harvest mechanically.
This alien-looking orange monolith approaches a tree, and this pincher comes out, which grabs a tree trunk from all sides. And then just as it's clamped, this upturned brolly opens up, and it also embraces the tree from all sides. And what actually is in the machine is a hydraulic shaker. And that is what shakes the tree. So it actually shakes the trunk of the tree, and the energy resonates through the mostly through the middle of the tree. So it's very important if you want to have an olive grove where you want your trees to be mechanically harvested, that you prune the trees for the energy to flow comfortably through the tree so you can get all the fruit you can. If you've got a lot of wispy parts to your tree, so if you, for example, your tree have what we call a vase shape, chances are your olive recovery will not be as good as if you had laterals, you know, where it literally, the energy goes up and comes down very quickly, and within 20 seconds you can see most of the olive fall into the brolly. So that is what we do every year. What used to take us two people and almost sometimes up to 4 to 5 minutes now takes us 20 seconds. No trees are harmed in the shaking. I mean, this grove has been shaken at least for 10 years now, and the trees are still looking very healthy. So you just need to have a good clearance, about a meter clearance from the ground, for the clamp to clamp the tree.
The bins fill up. Each takes about 400 kilos of olives, and Colin and Nalini run their hands through, chucking out stray bits of tree.
Oh, so beautiful, look at it. They're wixy and they're dark and they're shiny. You can almost see yourself in it, isn't it?
It's a good feeling when you think this through.
It was Colin who convinced Nalini they should get into olives.
My father came from California in the 50s to New Zealand and did a few things here, but became involved in the primary sector as an investor. So I've always been associated in one way or another with that sector and interested in it. So the olive option seemed like a good one for a number of reasons. One is we'd grown up with olives around us. Dad always received cans of olives from the relatives in California, and olive oil. But also I thought it was an opportunity to do something without the complexities of grapes, etc., that would have required me to be on the land a lot sooner. So both Nalini and I had quite busy lives in Wellington and thought, we wanted to grow quality olives and they would be available to sell to somebody who was putting quality olive oil in the market. And that all seemed like the right move. That gave us 10 years to get settled in. The Italians said it takes about 8 years for an olive tree to come to full maturity. And in a matter of, 5 years, we had a crop that was big enough to be commercial. And from that we had to do something, and there was nobody who wanted to buy fruit. So that's how Lotte moved from being a grower into having to be end-to-end.
But really, when we tasted our first oil, which was in 2002, we realised that we were part of a very, very exciting industry. I'm familiar with oils. You know, I'm Indian. I've grown up on mustard and soya and fenugreek and, you know, it's part of my life, oils on a daily basis. But there was just that green taste, you know, that the weather, the trees, the earth, the sky that came through that drop. We knew we were part of a very exciting adventure going forward. So here we are, 21 years later, you know, harvesting our 21st crop.
Nalini, a lawyer by profession, is now a farmer at heart.
But it's almost like watching a ballet when you look at that machine operating. There's just such beauty in it when you're a farmer and you waited all year. You've looked after your tree, waited all year, and then this machine comes to take your year's hard work. And it just gives you such joy to see that moment, because we are a winter crop. We harvest in winter, which means that there could be frost or hail that could take your entire year's work within something like 1 or 2 days. So if we hit, for example, a -3 or -4 frost 3 days in a row, you can be guaranteed that you've lost the crop. We're very lucky. We've had some frost already, but it's sort of been around the -1, and it's been a ground frost. Ground frost is good. We don't mind those. Then there's tree frost, where it actually literally hovers around the tree and settles on the tree. And that's when the fruit freezes. And as a result of the thawing of that fruit, we lose the quality of the oil. So it's very important we not have that. And luckily, we have not had that so far.
It's been a magical season for the olives. Rain at the right time and little wind at the important flowering period. Maturing has come a couple of weeks earlier this year.
We've harvested in another grove like this, what was it, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, where I had all my ski wear on plus overalls, standing in the rain, walking down the grove for 200, 300 trees, and then we gave up. It was just so cold and so wet, so muddy.
It's important for us to get our flu jab and have our, you know, cold tablets before the season arrives and build our immunity, because it could be up to 6 to 8 weeks that we're standing in the groves. So you have
it's
to
a long spread out harvest,
it's
isn't
long,
it?
Yeah, yes. And not necessarily, we're not necessarily harvesting every day. It depends on the variety. So this is a very good example. The Lacino that we're picking at the moment, we do pick it early. Barney is another variety, which is an Israeli variety, we pick early as well. But Koroniki, which is a Greek variety, which is known for its high polyphenols, we tend to wait almost to the end of the season to pick from there, to get the taste notes that we want.
What about birds this year? I know in the past they've had real problems with starlings.
Yes, they love olives. They particularly like the Koroniki because it's small enough for them to, I think, swallow the whole thing.
So how do you stop those birds from stripping your trees? You don't net them, do you?
We did initially.
Oh, you did?
Yes, we used to net them. It's hard work netting 400 trees or 380 trees we had, but they were short enough and they could be netted. Birds are very clever. They will sit on a net. They will sit as a group on a net. They will bounce on it, and one will feed while the others are bouncing, and we've seen it happen.
There's the starlings in particular. Starlings seem to have much smarter than we ever give them credit for.
Exactly. But over the years, we've realised that you just have to share some of it with them. But they're lazy eaters as well, and I think over the years we've realised that actually they much prefer to eat the fruit that's on the ground. And if you don't mow your grove, sort of up to two weeks before harvest, you'll find they actually much prefer to eat grass seeds and things like that rather than eat your olive trees. So we're a lot more relaxed now.
At least 3 or 4 of the groves Lot 8 sources from aren't fruiting at all this year.
They must have had very high winds during flowering or early fruit set that's affected. And the Italian varieties, now that the industry is 25, 30 years old, what we're starting to notice is the Italian varieties, which the Italians told us very early in the piece, are biennial fruiters, are actually showing themselves as biennial fruiters. So Frantoio, which we picked last week, normally from this grove we would get as much as 12 tons. We got 4. So they're
only fruiting every 2 years.
Every 2 years. So, you know, this is going to be a quality and quality and not the quantity, whereas last year it was quality as well as the quantity. But we've got enough oil to carry us through, so we're okay. We can afford to smile.
The 7 to 8 tons of Luchino harvested today will be trucked off to the mill for pressing tomorrow.
In the early days, it was... we used to strive to get picked and pressed, you know, within the 6 hours or whatever it all took. And then we did a bit of research, and the Europeans said to us that, you know, there's no harm in leaving it overnight and pressing the next day. You get more oil out of that fruit if it just has that slight resting period. As long as it's not warm, as long as the fruit doesn't overheat, which it doesn't because it's a winter fruit, and first thing in the morning it'll go through the press and you'll get really high quality oil coming out of those fruit.
It's the next day, and we're at the Leafy Ridge Olive Mill.
Sally, you've almost experienced the perfect harvest season. The only thing we haven't got today, so we've got rain, it's overcast, we're standing here, the ground is quite wet, but we haven't got that 5 degree temperature or that 1 degree temperature that we normally have during harvest. So you're lucky. It's quite warm. I think it's about 14 degrees. But yes, you're looking at a typical day at the press. This is how it starts. So olives arrived yesterday. It was picked yesterday afternoon. Arrived yesterday, and Bill and Craig have put it through the deleafer. Most of it's gone through the deleafer. So we've got, if you look behind me at the bins, you're looking at very clean fruit sitting back in those half-ton bins again, ready for the engineer to pick it up, weigh, and put it into the second hopper, which we'll take you through and show you why we do what we do over there.
The grove and mill owner is Craig Leafwright.
What happens to all those leaves?
They get blown over there, and we collect them up at the... It's wonderful for kids to play in, but we collect them up at the end of the year, and we take it and turn it into compost. We mix it in with the waste from the olive mill, makes a pomace, and you mix the leaves in with it, and you allow it to decompose and put it back onto the grove, and it makes great compost. Yeah.
There's very little waste. We pretty much use everything when it comes to olives, isn't it?
Yeah.
The branches, the leaves, the trunks that get pruned, you know, all of that is either used as firewood or get some chopped up and mulched up and put back into the ground again. So we are quite sustainable farmers, particularly in New Zealand. I think right through New Zealand you'll see this practice. We're going into the mill now. The first thing you're going to see as you walk in is another hopper. So you've seen the de-leafing where the olives ended up in one hopper. Now it's going into another. From there, the olives drop into a washer. So the olives get washed off all debris, anything that's including fertilizers. The fruit is then taken up to the top of that conveyor, which is where the hammer mill is located. It's very noisy. It literally, at great force, hammers the fruit into stone, skin and flesh. It all gets, you know, it's quite a violent piece of machinery that literally tears it apart. And it's a very, very important part of the process, because from there, what ends up in the unit after that, which is what we call a malaxing unit, comes a paste. It looks a little like a guacamole with lots of stones in it. So that is going to be in that malaxing unit from anywhere between 20 to 40 minutes. The malaxing basically means moving around, and the paddles will move the flesh over and over and over again. And in that process, the flesh warms up, and in the warming up, it releases the oils. And the marvelous thing about the end of the process is when you have a look through that little peephole, you'll actually see oil sitting at the top of the and, you know, for us producers, that's one of the wonderful things of being at the press, is to be able to witness that. So about 40-45 minutes later, that paste gets pumped into a separator.
Look at the colour.
The paste is then pumped into a separator. divided into solids and oil, then left to sit for 3 to 4 weeks without filtering before being decanted.
They're both yours.
Okay. So the reason we call this, or the making of olive oil, a cold press process is because there's no heat introduced in the making of that olive oil. If there's any heat, it's a heat that comes from the movement of the paste itself. If you start heating that, while you might get more oil out of it, you may not get extra virgin olive oil. The other is, we don't want the oil to be too warm. That's very important when you're making extra virgin olive oil as well. So heat is something that is very closely monitored by the plant engineer. But you can see it's glistening already.
Nalini waits for the oil to come through while Colin chats with a few of the other olive growers coming and going from the mill.
You do catch up with people from time to time when you're here. Sometimes there's nobody around. The mill's always noisy and busy. They're always all go. But yes, we do find out how others are doing and we do catch up. And yeah, it's a community of people at different levels of the different stages in the industry. There's a collegial atmosphere to most of them. We help one another out with things when we need to.
The oil is trickling through and Nalini is ready to taste.
What I'm showing you is a beautiful, luminous, green, viscous, you know, drop that's come from the press. And I'm just going to put that in my mouth. It's not the most dignified part of what we do. There's a lot of slurping, and that is because we're taking air in at the same time as the oil. And that sucking allows not only for the air to come through, but also for the oil to be coated all over, because different parts of the palate will pick up different things. So I'm hoping there's bitterness. I'm hoping there's a little bit of grassiness, but I'm also hoping to taste a very malolactic sort of taste of lechino flesh. It's sort of a butteriness, but it's not dairy butteriness. It's that viscous rolling of this velvety textured oil in your mouth, which is warm and soft. And that's exactly what I found. To me, this is New Zealand in a cup. This is the New Zealand we like to show to the world and to, you know, our own buyers in New Zealand as well, is that we make really high quality olive oil in this country, and that's because of the care that goes into producing this. I'm known as someone who's quite emotional when it comes to my products, and you can see why. I mean, it's hard not to be. It's like the birth of a child in your hand. Now, Sally, we're moving from the mill, where you've seen the olives being processed, into Lotte 8's commercial kitchen, where we do quite a bit of the sensory analysis and the blending of the oil and the teaching and the educating of the public about olive oils. So, welcome. Come through.
Part of your job, Nalini, is the blending of the oils.
Yes.
And you have developed a palate, or did you always have this great palate?
I have difficulty explaining that to people because it's so ingrained in me that I can't actually remember when I picked up that I could actually taste things that other people couldn't. But a lot of it happened here, right here, sitting in here, taking oils by variety, tasting it by variety, and just learning from doing it. It's a sensory thing, and you do really need to spend a lot of time doing that to come to understand it.
And how does your Pacific heritage influence your blending?
The Pacific heritage gave me a start that I sometimes look at children today and wonder whether they will ever understand. And that is, we grew up with everything natural. We did not grow up with processed food. I did not grow up with processed food. Everything was created from raw ingredients. You know, you minced your own garlic, your coriander, you cracked the coconut and you scraped the flesh and you made milk out of the coconut. So that basic understanding of food certainly helps in what you do, which in my case it certainly helps with what I produce for the market.
Nalini,
The olive oil that you produce is so delicate, so beautiful, so beautifully packaged. But some people would say, well, yes, it's lovely, but it's too expensive for me. Yeah. How is New Zealand producing all these fantastic oils ever going to be able to get its product to the masses?
We get asked that question quite often, don't mm-hmm. we, Colin? Yeah. We'd love to be able to produce at a price that is affordable for everyone. But there's so many factors that contribute to the price that you have to pay for it at the shelf. Apart from the markup, the retailer's markup itself, the cost of the logistics cost in New Zealand is very high. Labour costs are very high as well. But if you look at our packaging and our product, you can see the bottles, which are from Europe. At the moment, we can't source bottles that are made in New Zealand for our oils. Hopefully one day soon we will be able to do that. Testing, which is a pivotal part of what makes extra virgin olive oil or allows us to call it extra virgin olive oil, can only be done in Australia. So, you know, we have to produce, blend, pack, and then send the oils to Australia to get it technically analyzed. And that's not just putting the oil through its lab testing, but a sensory analysis as well. And that can only be done by a panel that is accredited by the International Olive Oil Council. So when you put all of those things together, every step of the way, there's a cost involved. And each one of those contribute to where we are with the pricing at the moment. Looking to address that and being able to do something about it, New Zealand has to look to grow more olives. There has to be more of us. I mean, we grow such a good product. There's many reasons why the industry needs to grow. We need to have more olive growers in New Zealand growing olives, making locally produced olive oil, which that will affect the prices eventually.
And what are the barriers, though, to that, to getting more people involved in the industry?
I think that a lot more educating has to be done. We need to get out there and educate the market. We need to be able to tell people that actually they grow really well in New Zealand, that there are some areas particularly like the top of the South Island and sort of Hawke's Bay down towards Wellington, which grows really good olives. So get your soil tested and have a look at it. And it's a really good time to talk about this, because here we are talking about bringing down our carbon footprints, you know, and the whole cleaner air, clean green planting and all of that. I would replace every pine tree with an olive tree if it's possible. So there are many reasons why New Zealand should seriously look at growing more olives.
Nalini Baruch of Lot 8 with her husband Colin. Nalini's constantly on the lookout for new flavours to add to her oils, and lately has expanded the line to include the yuzu fruit and New Zealand native herbs. The couple would like to see growers levied to help with research and development and as a way of expanding the industry.